This is Edge Cases, a podcast about the grumpier side of software development, mostly, but not always, Apple-related, featuring myself and my co-host, the BJ and the Bear of Objective-C. I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Will French.
This is episode 50, the Big 5-0.
Wow,
it's Saturday, May 18th, 2013, and our topic this week is logging. What? Why is that funny?
It just is.
Okay. I thought I was going to get...
like the old man episode. It's like, we have nothing else to talk about on our 50th episode, so let's talk about blogging. At least we aren't talking about podcasting.
What? Logging. Not blogging.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you can understand why I was laughing.
Yeah. Well, I was sure you were going to laugh at the BJ and the Bear thing, considering you did get the giggles for the...
BJ and the Bear, you got me there. I don't get the reference.
Okay. It's another one of these, you know, old shows.
Okay.
Not good shows, mind you.
No.
But I figure I want to like something and the something, you know. And I've actually got a couple of those, so there's more coming up. Spoiler. Okay. So you have some follow-up on the CocoaPods stuff you
were talking about? Mm-hmm. I have extensive follow-up. Mm-hmm. By extensive, I mean three people have talked to us.
Yeah, right. Extensive for us.
First off, I'm going to butcher pretty much all these names except for the last one, so I apologize in advance, but... podcasting tradition. But I'm going to take a shot. Eloy Duran, who's the instigator of the CocoaPods project,
right?
Apparently is actually a fan of our show and has subjected himself to every single episode.
Poor guy.
I know. It's beyond what I can do. So he actually wrote in and gave us two pieces of interesting follow-up. Number one, I mentioned that Schwa had the one of the reasons he didn't like CocoaPods was that it had the Mac Ruby dependency, and I was a bit quizzical about it, if I can use that word, if that actually fits. I think it does, and because when I installed CocoaPods, I didn't see it scroll by or anything like that. I didn't know if it like was a hidden dependency or whatever. And so apparently there is no Mac Ruby dependency any longer, and it hasn't been for a long time. Apparently initially, and Eloy has updated the Common Misconceptions wiki page to address this, and that apparently the old version, the initial versions of CocoaPods did use Mac Ruby because they want to leverage macOS 10's built-in support for plists and to read and write them. But it hasn't been the case for a long time. And now it's pure Ruby, and they rely on some sort of like native extension compiled gem thing to read and write proper lists. So, and a case in point that actually it won't even run under Mac Ruby, which I always got the impression that kind of Mac Ruby was like, I guess we should quickly say what Mac Ruby is. Mac Ruby is basically a re-implementation of Ruby with a hosted on the Objective-C runtime. And what's interesting is that makes all Ruby objects like our descendants from like NS objects. And it's very interesting technology. And I guess we've never done a show on it, so that we're going to have to put that in the hopper.
Sure.
So that's pretty much it. It just doesn't require Mac Ruby anymore. It hasn't for a long time. And then I was confused in terms of exactly how CocoaPods worked in terms of if you had say two dependencies, and you have dependency A and dependency B, and dependency A requires library C. And library C, it says it requires 1.1 of library C, and then dependency B requires 1.2 of library C. What happens then? And I was under the impression that it would require, assuming that they were disjointed and like it listed a specific version number that each one required or whatever, that it would have to somehow, you'd have to have like basically duplicate libraries. Like you'd have two of the same classes, multiple versions at the same time.
Sure.
And that was really problematic with the Objective-C runtime as we know it today. Basically, you can't do that. I think most developers have seen the warning message that's printed out to say, this class has been defined twice. Which one will be chosen will be randomly determined or whatever.
Spin the bottle, sure.
Well, that's a very sad version of spin the bottle.
yes, it is.
So part of this is my ignorance about how there was a sentence there talking about how Bundler works. And Bundler is this Ruby technology of some sort that I'm really unfamiliar with. When I was learning Ruby and Rails and all that, Bundler didn't exist. It's something that came along after I kind of got out of the scene, so I'm pretty ignorant on it. But from what I can tell, it's a way of kind of pulling down gems into your project locally, so that way it can your dependencies are bundled with your application, so that helps make it more portable and less kind of dependent on the outside world. And so I didn't really understand how Bundler worked. And since CocoaPods kind of modeled after that, that my ignorance kind of carried over. But Eloy chimed in with a description. First, he links to this Dice article by Pat Shaughnessy, if I'm saying that right, and called How Does Bundler Bundle? And it basically kind of walks you through a simple dependency on Uglifier, and Uglifier has a bunch of dependencies on its own, and how does it get resolved, and what happens then if there is a conflict, and stuff like that. But he wrote this nice sentence, so I'm going to pretty much, Eloy has written this nice sentence that pretty much sums up very well, so I'll just kind of quote it here. So he wrote, "In short, the idea is that we always want to activate the latest possible version that satisfies all requirements. For this to work, you need a smart algorithm that's able to go back in the resolve tree and change the activated version where possible and only fail if the actual requirements that can never be satisfied both. It can never be satisfied for both. Regardless of how smart the algorithm is, the end result is always a tree of unique incompatible dependencies or an incompatible error, not multiple versions of the same library." So this is a key point. So this is where I said that it couldn't seem to really mesh with Objective-C runtime. It's not you're going to get duplicate libraries defining the same classes. Is that it will, if it can't resolve the constraints, it will just fail. It will error out on you. And then it's up to you to figure out how to go about resolving this problem yourself. So that I'd much prefer that type of, fail fast in the beginning type stuff than how I thought it worked. So that's pretty nice.
Actually sounds like auto layout.
Yeah, right. Okay, and then Matt Massicott? He's at Maddie. Oh, by the way, Eloy is at Alloy, A-L-L-O-Y, on Twitter. So Matt Massicott is at Maddie, M-A-T-T-I-E, on Twitter. And he gives us a few bullet points here from our episode. Two about CocoaPods, one of which related to the pre-binding stuff. I think this kind of came up randomly in the last episode. He said that the compiler and linker do, in fact, have enough information to strip away Objective-C classes in certain circumstances in case of static libraries. And CocoaPods linking is implemented with static libraries, at least in iOS. And I knew that. The two flags interested are the -all_load and -obc. Have you worked with standard libraries very much and on iOS or Mac OS X, Andrew?
I have used those flags, ring a bell.
Okay.
I've definitely had to deal with libraries in that fashion, such that you make sure that they leave in the Objective-C and they don't strip out anything that's needed by the dynamic linker.
Right.
So I know I've needed to use those. Mm-hmm. I no longer remember the exact details of it. It was probably some adding some sort of static library to Xcode during my time there.
Right. Yeah, I actually ran into this when I was working with Dave Dribben, and he was fanatical with this. The kind of the philosophical goal was the platonic ideal was that each .m file should be compiled just once. And so he didn't you know, with me, I'm willy-nilly. I will, you know, if I would put it in a framework and then have, and then I wouldn't mind if the same .m file was compiled multiple times, but this was against his philosophy. So he actually invested the time to try and figure out how to make this work so that Xcode would never have to compile the same thing twice. And this was, I think, back in the day where maybe Xcode or Project Builder wasn't as good or as it is today or something. I don't know. But he was pretty fanatical about this. And that's where he stumbled upon the categories thing. And he taught the rest of us at the programming group that I ran at the time, PSIG. And yeah, so that's where I first heard about it. So I knew about the dash opc thing. I don't think I knew about the dash all underscore load command. But so the thing is that, you know, I remember the dash opc stuff, and I was pretty sure it was so, you know, it would add that information as you mentioned. But I think Matt has it wrong here, that this is actually commands to the compiler, or I guess the linker, telling it to add information to the .a file. It's not, it doesn't provide enough information to strip classes you don't use. And like I said before, it's like, you know, you could pop up a panel in both a Mac and iOS app and say, give me a name of a class, I will instantiate it for you, give me a name of a method, I will call it for you. And so, at compile time, that information cannot be known whether or not you're using a class. I mean, I suppose there could be static analysis done that would not allow that option. Now, if a class isn't used or is detected as not used, that maybe those options just kind of go away. But maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, in order to cut this down maybe a little bit, as far as I'm aware, those options predate any of the kind of the newfangled LLVM
right.
static analysis stuff. They have nothing to do with analyzing the contents of things and everything to do with just saying throw all the symbols in. And that's what all load is. All load means says don't try to strip anything out. That's what it's for. So it's definitely not for stripping things out. It's for making sure that you get all of the stuff you need from a static library, even if it's not used, even if it's not used directly. And that's what allows you to link in Objective-C stuff, because again, a lot of that stuff isn't called directly. So that's why it's there.
Okay, and a couple more points quickly here. He did mention that CocoaPods has poor support for non-open source libraries, that is, pre-built libraries, and it's possible to produce working pod specs for pre-built stack libraries, but it's painful and ugly, and it sounds like the CocoaPod implementers aren't super interested in supporting this use case. Pretty much all the stuff I use is in source code form, but I have heard a bunch of my developer friends having to use pre-compiled stuff, so I can understand his pain here. And finally, for the dilets thing, he said that pre-binding was a mechanism for speeding up functional dispatch and dynamically linked code. But he said that 10.3 introduced the dilet shared cache, and that's what sped it up. And I'm not sure about the implementation details here, so I'll just put that out there. He said the magic was in the shared cache, and it might have fallen out because I mentioned how it's like they sharked dilid, and they were able to speed up. Maybe that's what they discovered what needed to be done. But my recollection differs from his information. But he seems to actually know about the shared cache, and I don't, so I'll just put that out there. And finally, John Birchfield, which is probably the only name I haven't mangled here, is that he found out that CocoaPods required a version of Ruby that was newer than the version he had installed as Mac by default, which I find surprising because in the Economist Conceptions or maybe the CocoaPods FAQ, I forget which, it's actually mentioned that it should work with the version of Ruby that comes with your Mac. And you can use RB and env or RVM to install a newer version of Ruby, and that should work the same with CocoaPods. I didn't follow up with John Birchfield about what version of Mac OS X he's using. Maybe just 10.8 is fine and 10.7 isn't, or 10.6. I don't know what version he's using. But it should be good enough, and I wonder if he just ran into something else. But that's the extent of the CocoaPods follow-up.
Yeah, we did get a decent amount of feedback. I think, you know, again, comparatively. Mm-hmm. I think it did. It's something that a lot of people are either working on or thinking about. Okay. So for logging, let's see, what I'm going to talk about this week. I'm going to start by going over some of the technical specs for chainsaws. And then next, I'm going to go over some types of trees. And then finally, some thoughts about, yes?
Flannel? I'm hoping flannel.
Well, you know, do you want me to sing the Lumberjack song? Because I can do it.
I think everyone would pay money, cash money to hear you sing that.
That's right. Hey, they're hosting, taken care of. yeah. So yes, the actual agenda is perhaps a little less interesting for certain song-loving people everywhere. I'm going to be talking about probably the two big things I'm going to be talking about today are Xcode breakpoint actions and the Apple system logger.
Okay.
So we'll see how that goes. So do I need to define logging?
I think
we're good, right?
You must be this tall to ride.
So I think most of us log things in Cocoa applications using the nslog function or some variant of the printf function. And then the two main reasons to do logging, I think, I'm going to try to break things down here. There's debugging locally and getting diagnostics, and that's usually remotely. And so I'm going to start with the first one and go to the second one. Talk about debugging first then. And so normally when you're debugging, if you want to get information about your application, you use breakpoints. You don't use logging. But I do find that I'm still using logging quite a bit in my current day-to-day activities. So let's go over some of the reasons you might want to do that. Well, you might not want to disrupt your current activity while you're gathering information about it. So you don't want to, you know, you set a breakpoint where you're going to stop there. Like, so if you're scrolling, for example, you want to get information while you're scrolling, or if you don't want to interrupt network activity or something like that, mm-hmm. or if you want to do something, say 10 times before you would really need to stop. Well, if you just set a regular breakpoint, well, you can't, you're going to stop in the middle of each one. No, you don't want to do that. You want to stop. If at all, you want to stop at the 10th one. So you just use logging for that and then you won't stop at all. And then also logging can be useful for other developers. So if you have a lot of breakpoints in your code, in your project, they're not the default breakpoints are not shareable. Mm-hmm. And so those are all some reasons why I do logging, why I know other people use logging. But what's interesting is there are pretty much answers for these in every one of the Xcode breakpoints features over the last couple of years. And I don't know how much you've used some of these sort of newer fangled features. Of course, they've been around maybe 5+ years, some of them, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. So I'm going by the WWDC session from 2012 called Debugging in Xcode, but there have been other sessions like this as well. I'll put the link in the show notes. And it's interesting because that session starts with Apple's usual dose of propaganda. In this case, they really kind of disparage regular logging quite heavily in a way that seems, a little smug to me. and I've talked before about how I don't really like the fact that Apple kind of mixes in useful information with their propaganda. And it was also annoying to me with that as well. Because I immediately felt like, oh, I need to stand up for logging. because there are other reasons why you might not want to do it. And these reasons have everything to do with Xcode. So for example, there are some times when the breakpoints have been quite fiddly in mm-hmm. the past. I do find that they've gotten much better, but they're still not perfect. And occasionally you'll hear people on Twitter talk about, oh, I can't make these breakpoints go away, or I can't make it stop in this particular location. For me, even recently, I've occasionally found, well, I can't get rid of a breakpoint. You know, it's just always there.
It seemed to be like maybe an LLDB regression or something like that. Because GDB with breakpoints, I also ran into the fiddliness for a long time. And it basically cleared it up for the past, I want to say, 2, maybe 3 years. And the problem seems to be kind of back with LLDB now.
So you think they fixed it in GDB and then LLDB made it worse?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's quite possible. LLDB certainly made quite a few things worse for a while. They had to go through quite a bit of some teething problems. And of course, there's also some unusual cases. Most people don't have to deal with these anymore, even if you could, I guess. Java used to be a real problem with breakpoints. It'd be very fiddly. And the new version of Java, Mono, I would bet 99% of our users have not dealt with the Mono runtime. But you can actually run it under Xcode, and then your breakpoints will almost always fail eventually.
Sorry, when you said the new version of Java, you mean C#?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I didn't know you could run
You can.
I always want to call it mono, but mono? Mono?
It is, yeah.
Yes, I think we talked about this before even, but mono, okay. Yes, mono, so you can run mono under Xcode, okay.
And it will stop at breakpoints and that sort of thing.
Wow.
Okay. It just won't do it well.
So okay,
it really does feel like Java in that sense, okay. The way Java used to work. So the way Apple recommends getting, not using logging in your own code, not using log statements in your own code, is using breakpoint actions. And they've been around for a long time, at least 5 years, 5, 6 years, 7 right. years. They were around under Xcode 3. And so, you know, you go back through these cases that I mentioned. Well, you want to get some information and not stop. Well, mm-hmm. if you look at if you edit your breakpoints, if you do command option click on a breakpoint, for example, it brings up this little sheet. And you can click this checkbox, which says automatically continue after evaluation. So that way you add a debugger, a breakpoint action. And there are three that I would normally use, the shell command, log message, or debugger command. And these are all, I don't know if they're entirely self-explanatory, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them. All of these are ways that you can basically add information to the log. And so if you add information to the log through those ways and then continue immediately, then that's pretty much the same thing as doing an NSLog. What I had found, one reason why I had not used breakpoint actions for this kind of activity when I had tried it originally, and this was when I was at Apple, was because what I found under Xcode 3 was that even if you check that checkbox, it would pause just a bit. It would be like a hitch. And so it would kind of stop and maybe highlight that portion of the UI and then keep going.
Okay. That's like the opposite of the problem I have with Xcode now. It's like it will stop at breakpoint but not update the UI, and then I have to like invoke a backtrace pop-up to actually get to where I've actually stopped. But okay.
I'm sorry, one more time. It will stop.
It will stop at the breakpoint, but it will fail to update the debugger UI to point to like the line you stopped on. Yeah, so I'll actually, the standard workaround for that is I'll use the pop-up menu that shows you kind of the backtrace of the stack frames, and then I will select where it currently is at, but that seems to be enough to kick it to actually to update the UI to where I'm actually stopped.
Wow, so, I mean, this is the current version of Xcode you're seeing this one?
Well, and this seems to be in both GDB and LLDP.
No, that's bad. So I haven't had problems like that.
Okay.
And one thing that I was going to say is, you know, when I was just trying this recently with an iOS application, I didn't see that kind of hitch anymore in the usage. So it seemed fast enough such that I could scroll without problems. Now, does that mean that it's not stopping at all? I can't guarantee that. And actually, one thing they mentioned in the WWDC presentation is this, one of the actions is to play a sound, which I always found really stupid. I just can't imagine a really great real-world case where that's going to help you very much. And one reason why it isn't going to help you very much is because playing the sound apparently, it seems to me from what I tested today, it's synchronous.
Mm.
So, you know, you play a sound, the sound is, you know, half a second or a second long. That's time you're taking away from your application. So if I'm scrolling and I'm, you know, swiping with my finger, those swipes aren't going to get registered until the sound is done playing, which makes it really useless to have that as something that just keeps going. So I still think it's something that I would be a little wary of in general to do all that much with, although it does seem that logging by itself is useful. Now, the log message, breakpoint action, does have a different, it's so stupid, it has a different format than regular NSLog statements. You do things in different ways. And that, you know, again, why did they do that? Of course, it's easier because it's a very simple format and all of the options are listed there in the UI. So that's good. So it isn't really a showstopper, but it's still, you know, it's just another thing. Like, why do I have to change how I act when I go to do this? And then the last thing, the other reason why I would be a little hesitant to use this over logging is that the UI for it is not great. Now, it looks nice, like most of the rest of Xcode 4, but like most of the rest of Xcode 4, it sacrifices some functionality. So, for example, the edit window has really tiny type, and it's really small. Like, why did they do that? Right? And you can't make it bigger. Why did they do that? You know, so somebody said, ooh, it looks really cool to have it be in this little tiny window that, you know, pops up. It's got a, you know, it's a little popover thing now.
Right, right.
But then, you know, like if I'm typing in a log statement in the source code window, well, I've got as much space as the editor shows me in, you know, a nice large type, you know, with the rest of my source code. Instead, I've got this little tiny window that I've got to make sure. You know. So, you know, it feels fragile. Now, it's actually less fragile than it looks. The popover window is not like a palette window. It doesn't go away when you switch to another app and come back. But it's still, I don't know, it's not ideal as far as I'm concerned. But the fact is that they really have basically handled all the cases that I mentioned. Automatically continuing. Also, like if you want to do something 10 times and then get information about it, there's a little thing in there which says, you know, wait 10 times before you hit the breakpoint.
Yeah, I am.
That's very nice. Mm-hmm. I think that's relatively new. I'm not sure I had seen that before. And then if you want to share it with other developers, well, you know, normally checking and logging code is probably the easiest and most straightforward thing you can do. But you can, there's a share breakpoint option when you look at breakpoints. And that'll put the info about the breakpoint in a separate file, which you can check in and have other people use. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's good too. So, I still use NSLog most of the time myself. And it's just, you know, it's just easy, it's fast. I've got all the habits down. I can type this stuff out really quickly. And I don't have to deal with, you know, XCode being flaky in the same way. But I think, you know, especially from my investigation, you know, today looking at this stuff, I will probably be more likely to try it again and see if it does what I need it to. So that's what I have to talk about for debugging anyway. So moving on, any thoughts from you, Wolf, before I move on?
You're going to be talking about system logging next, sounds like?
Yeah.
I have a lot to say about logging in general. So, so I think we should continue on with your next topic point. So if we get cut off, that I'm the one who gets cut off.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and maybe this will inspire you to do a logging episode next. Maybe that'll become a pattern here. Okay. So the second thing is diagnostics, and this is where instead of doing local debugging, you're logging for the sake of finding out information about what's happening on other people's machines, mm-hmm. The people that you've sold your app to, hopefully. And I'm going to take quite a few talking points here from a blog post. And in this case, I am talking about blogging. Wolf, just so, you know, right? So we have that, have this true. From Mike Weller. Have you heard of Mike Weller?
I'm not sure.
Did you say you're not sure?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. No. So he has a blog called iOS Development, You're Doing It Wrong.
Okay.
Which I like just from the title, of course. Now, the reason you might not have heard of it is because he really only did a couple of posts in the middle of 2012. And he actually numbered them. So there's You're Doing It Wrong 1, You're Doing It Wrong 2. And he stopped at You're Doing It Wrong 4. And I'm not surprised that he stopped. These are long, detailed posts. The kind of thing you can't keep up if you have a full-time job, in my opinion. But in any case, I'll put a link to this post in the show notes, and you can look at his other stuff too. And so his first one, You're Doing It Wrong, number one, was called NSLog. And he's had a couple points in here. And he says that his first point was that people are overusing logging in shipping apps. Mm-hmm. And so he points to some examples on his iPhone of just lots of spew from a variety of third-party applications. It's rather amusing, actually. And let's see. So my little point on this, interesting point that I remember from working at Apple. There was one point when I was working on Xcode. Of course, I was working on Xcode the whole time, so let's not make it sound like I was working on several things. But when I was working at Apple, I remember during one release cycle, the word came down, and I don't remember the exact details anymore, but the word came down that we should minimize our console logging in the OS. Now, Xcode being part of the whole OS group division, I guess. And they said to us, well, you know, you guys are putting too much stuff into console. Mm. And this will happen both with frameworks and with applications. So you've probably seen this every so often with frameworks. I believe if there are nib errors or zib errors in like resizing stuff that occasionally that will get logged. I do know I've seen it with the PDF conversion if there's an error with that. So there are things that will get put to console in your application, even though you haven't done anything. mm-hmm. or you haven't done that much. These are errors that you can correct sometimes. Sometimes you can't. But it, you know, there's just some spew in there. So Xcode would do that too. Now, if there were conditions that were, you know, something weird was going on, something that you didn't necessarily want, something noteworthy, you know, something you wanted to know about if it were happening, but not, you know, a dire emergency, you know, you'd say, all right, we'll throw in a log about it. So, hey, you know, so if we see it in the future, we'll know that something's wrong and we should fix that. Mm-hmm. But now if you multiply that by, you know, 20 engineers or however many people were working on Xcode at the time and all the frameworks, each one adding their own little noteworthy logging as they go, then things can get pretty chatty. So the powers that be said, well, it's getting too noisy to be useful. Cut it back. And so I thought that was interesting. Did that happen more than once? Might not have happened. It might have only happened once. But of course, you know, and everybody pairs it back and then you gradually add it in again and then mm-hmm. you got to do it again. But it was at least commendable that they said, you know, hey, we want to make console useful for everybody. Okay. So he also talks about that there are logging levels. And he talks about this as described in an Apple document called Daemons and Services Programming Guide, Logging Errors and Warnings. And just look in his blog post for a link to that. Mm-hmm. It was interesting because there's like 7 levels to it. Let's see, you know, look at this. Like all the way to abort, you know, system shutting down at the very top level, and then, you know, very info diagnostics debugging stuff at the bottom level. And while this was kind of interesting, of course, I also think that 7 levels is a bit high, and we'll actually get more into that in a bit. So when he talks about this as part of this daemons and services programming guide, that almost makes it sound like, well, that's just for daemons and services. Like if you look at console in OS X for your applications, there aren't these levels listed there in general when people are logging things out. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is that on iOS there are, like, there's a, like, if you look at what NSLog spits mm-hmm. out, and you don't look at it in your Xcode, you know, debugger log, but you look at it from the logs from the actual device, and you can look at this through Xcode, you can look at this through iPhone configuration utility. Everything that you spit out through NSLog has a warning in front of it, mm-hmm. warning string, and that's like the 4th level of mm-hmm. logging. And so there, everyone uses those levels. And those levels are not just for daemons and services. They're for everybody. And that brings me to the sort of the last big thing I want to talk about, which is Apple System Log, or ASL. And this is something that is actually it's not new, right? This was introduced in Leopard. Mm-hmm. And it's something that everybody uses, but you use it through the APIs you were always using. So mm-hmm. NSLog now uses it as well. But the specific APIs for it are in ASL.h. Now, Wolf, have you used these APIs?
I believe I have.
Yeah.
So, it's been a while.
Right. So they've actually been around, right? They've been around since Leopard. And the ASL.h itself has not been updated since 2010. And my original thinking there was, well, that means it's, you know, maybe it's a little disused, maybe it's a little neglected or maybe abandoned. But it turns out that it isn't because, well, it might not be in development anymore, but it's certainly still being used. Mm-hmm. And one way to find out sort of the scope of ASL, what it can do, what it is being used for, is to look at the apparently 9-part, possibly 10-part, a series of blog posts by Peter Hosey.
Our good friend Peter Hosey. I was actually thinking going to bring that up. I'm glad you did.
Friends of the show. So have you seen his posts on
I ASL? Have.
Yeah.
Consumed them all.
And they're from 2008, so they're from a while ago. And So he goes through a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff involved with ASL. Now, I've only used ASL myself when I needed to log something from, I believe it might have been a LaunchD process. Mm-hmm. It was some sort of process which was not an application, and where I found that your normal printf APIs didn't work. And gotcha. So, you know, I Googled around and I said, well, how do you get logging? Oh, you get logging by using this special set of APIs. And so I used them, but, you know, I didn't really like them that much. I mean, they're C-level APIs. Mm-hmm. And I know why Apple does this. I've actually heard people even mention it recently that, you know, they do this because Apple does write code that's both Objective-C at the higher level and C at the lower level. So when they introduce an API, they want it to be used by everybody. But, you know, you've heard me complain about this before. I want my Objective-C APIs. Mm-hmm. You know, you remember me complaining about block syntax, right? Same thing. And they're also, you know, they're really pretty complicated. Like, as I said, they've got 7 levels of logging. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of other stuff you need to set up your own channel or your own something else. I actually, you know, again, I haven't used them myself too recently, but there's more to it than just, you know, doing NSLog. And so what's interesting for me is that they really are both too simple in the sense that they're C APIs and too complex in the sense that they have a lot of this extra crap that you have to deal with for me to find them useful on a day-to-day basis. But it's funny because they should be interesting to me. They should be more appealing to me. Because as Peter Hosey talks about, they are Apple's attempt to do a better version of logging. Mm-hmm. Because logging, one thing I meant to say at the beginning of this is that logging is the graffiti of the software development world. right? What was I going to say about this? It's ugly. Nobody really likes it, and it's actually hard to get any useful information out of it. You know, because the thing is, you're translating all of your information down to undifferentiated, you know, characters, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And you know, it feels like that's a very primitive technique. I mean, we all do it, but there's got to be a better way. But there isn't a better way. Well, Apple tried to do a better way. They tried to give you something which is really more like a database than a stream, because ASL. With ASL, when you say, here's my log statement, you're actually saying, well, here's my set of keys and values for this thing. Here's my dictionary, mm-hmm. you know, basically, for this, you know, whatever I want to, this entry I want to make in this database. And now if you look at console.app in OS X, and you look at any one of what just look like undifferentiated log statements, you say, okay, I'm going to select one of those and look at the inspector for it. Well, it's actually, you know, keys and values. And there's a whole bunch of things in here. Like, each one has a UID, right? Each one mm-hmm. has mm-hmm. all sorts of information. And one thing that Peter Hosey talks about is he says, well, when you're setting up this log and when you're adding a log entry, you can add anything you want. It's key value pairs. You can, you know, put all sorts of information in there that you want to have in there, and it, you know, they'll just remember it. And you can also apparently do searches on it. Mm-hmm. So again, in console, if you look at file new system log query, you can do a lot of stuff in here. Now, he goes over in his posts how to use this most successfully. And there are some tricks to it that I would have had me, you know, banging my head against the wall if I tried to figure it out myself. But again, it's good that you have the posts about it. But what I see here is, It's a pretty complex system. It's a pretty involved system. And I think if I had been... And so I haven't used it myself for that purpose. And what I keep thinking is, if I wanted a system that had this much complexity to it for my own application, I don't know if I would want to use Apple's APIs to do it. Because if I wanted something which is more complex, I'd want to be minimizing the complexity by making it a very tight, a very custom system that just has the features that I need, which would probably be fairly idiosyncratic. And I want to make sure that that's the only complexity in it, that I don't have a whole bunch of extra complexity for this general purpose system. You know, like, for example, like the levels that, you know, I can say, okay, this is very important, this is less important. Yeah, you know, I don't need a general system for that. I need levels that I need for a very particular things that I want to look at. Because if mm-hmm. I actually have messages at 7 different log levels, you know, what the hell? I'm not going to be able to make sense of all that. You know, I'm not going to be able to make good use of this huge amount of flexibility. Mostly I'll just want to say, well, I want to see what I want to see. I want to see the stuff that's related to the specific problem I have right now. And levels, I don't need levels for that. Maybe I need you know, I need some sort of keyword, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And if you put that out to text, I mean, the thing, you have this whole big dictionary, which in theory should be very useful. But, you know, searching for a particular keyword in text is really easy. It's not something mm-hmm. that requires a whole database behind it for that. So I'm going to keep it in mind. I'm going to see if I can use it anywhere. But it's also the case that you only need this if you think there's going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. Or if you want, you know, sort of performance diagnostics or anything like that. And I haven't found cases like that yet. You know, most of the time you really want to minimize logging. You don't want to put in a huge ton of logging arbitrarily for no reason. So you want to use it for a particular reason. And I haven't found the case for that yet. Now, I have a one application that I've worked on, which did actually do a lot of systematic logging for exactly that purpose, for exactly the fact of, you know, being able to say, yes, when there's a problem, I want to see everything that happened in a particular range of actions, for example. But this was a cross-platform application. And so it's interesting, you know, you know, we've talked about this, or other people have talked about this, with sort of the deal with iCloud right now, that iCloud has certain enviable or certain usable traits, and you know, the people might actually want, but they don't want to get locked in, because if you use iCloud, that means you can't use the same logic in your website and in your Android application, and that's very important to people. And, you know, it's the same thing here. Like, even in that one case where I could have used this because it was cross-platform, nope, can't use it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to, you know, it's been very interesting. It's went kind of a little weird for me with this one. And that's actually something of a pattern at this point, where I went in saying, well, I'll get some information and then I'll tell people about it. But it turns out that this is really kind of a stepping stone for me. For learning something, like if I really want to learn ASL, if I really want to see what it can do, take it up for a drive, just in the same way with the Xcode breakpoint actions, is something I'm going to need to spend more time in the future on, rather than something that I can say right now, well, that's it, that's my opinion, that's my judgment, that's all I got for it.
Mm-hmm.
But from the things that I'm thinking right now, it's really funny that it's more that I want to find a reason to like ASL than that I have found a reason to like it just yet. And again, even going through Peter Hosey's post, where he talks a lot about, you know, why you want to use it, what it's good for, it just wasn't completely convincing for me at a practical level. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm at the moment. I'm sure I'll be revisiting it in the future.
Okay. It might be as soon as next week, because I'm going through my list of things that I thought of while you were talking. And I have a list of 7 items here, and each one is kind of beefy in its own right. So, and we're currently at 42 minutes. Yeah, so yeah. I think we've just built out another episode on this topic.
Woo! Okay. Great. So, and maybe you'll fill that time up so I won't have time to respond, and then we'll, I'll have to do another episode, and then, yeah.
Yes, and we'll just keep it going like volleyball.
Yeah. Alrighty. Please visit our website, edgecasesshow.com, all one word. For show notes, a link to our podcast on iTunes, and more. And we'll see you next time.
A-B-O-N-D-I-O-U-S, A-Pontius, R-E-N-T-Z-S-C-H, Rensis, spells wrench.